Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano coming up on a free agency edition of Inside Coverage. Is Tua now the Falcons starter? Why wasn't there more of a market for Malik Willis? And Tyler Linderbaum and Jalen Phillips got how much? It's Charles Robinson and Jory Epstein and yours truly, Inside Coverage Free Agency, next. Happy New Year, everybody. Happy new league year. Technically not until Wednesday, but free agency is well underway. And this is a live, we're going to do it live edition of Inside Coverage on Yahoo. Thanks for being here live on the YouTubes or YouTube Sports TV. My name is Andrew Siciliano, yahoosports.tv, I beg your pardon, on the YouTube. You got what I'm saying. Jory Epstein is here, senior NFL writer. Charles Robinson, senior NFL writer, will be here shortly as well as the money is flowing. Officially, not official, but Jory, you know how this works. I don't call this legal tampering. I call it the free agency window officially open, the negotiating window officially open. The salary cap is $301 million, and some of these deals are just eye-popping.
It's a good day to be a center, Andrew. A good day to be a center, particularly for a team that really needs a center and might not be able to guarantee you many wins this year.
Yeah, you know, we were going to start with the quarterbacks, but let's do the center first, because I do think this is the 1 year, and we'll tell you that Malik Willis is going to the Dolphins and Tua Tagovailoa is going to the Falcons. They only have lefties now in their offensive lineup. They're much like a team in spring training that's trying to find a righty bat. That's the Falcons now. We'll start with Tyler Linderbaum, however, who has a 3-year contract reportedly worth $81 million that can become official Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern time with the Las Vegas Raiders. The Ravens lose a guy they wanted to keep. They chose not to pick up the 5th-year option. They chose not the franchise tag because that number is ridiculous. And in return, the Raiders meet the price of the franchise tag, meet the price of that 5th-year option, and go far above and beyond what any center had made before. The previous high APY, annual yearly value of a contract for a center, is Creed Humphrey in Kansas City at $18 million. Tyler Linderbaum, Jory, went 150% of that number. He goes to $27 million, and it's only a 3-year deal. He gets to hit free agency again potentially as a very young man.
Absolutely. And I mean, look, as we all know, numbers this week are a little bit fungible. They usually represent the max value of these contracts and even the guarantees. Is it fully guaranteed? Is it guaranteed for injury? There's a little bit of funny money this week. That said, the Raiders had to overpay because Tyler Linderbaum had options where he was probably going to win more. He had more familiarity with the coaching staff, given how many Ravens coaches are all over. For example, even the Cleveland Browns have Todd Monken, who was Tyler's offensive coordinator last year in Baltimore, and Baltimore still had interest in Tyler at the right price point. But when you look at what the Raiders needed, they are expected to draft Fernando Mendoza first overall, and you have to bring in a quarterback to a solid offensive line. And the center is huge. I know we often talk about left tackle and how left tackle can protect the blind side, but I watched when Dak Prescott was a rookie in 2016. It was my first year covering the Cowboys, and Travis Frederick, all-pro center pretty much every year he was healthy enough to play, was his center. And it was not only that the pocket was cleaner and that the Aaron Donalds of the world are now, you've got other defensive tackles coming up the middle, the Jalen Carters of the world are not able to get to the quarterback. It's also this element of, hey, if the quarterback doesn't immediately pick up all of NFL protections, which is normal, by the way, it would be unusual if a quarterback could get that NFL playbook and all of the different elements of protections in real time up to speed, then you have a center who can help with these calls, can help with the protections. The center is the quarterback of the offensive line. And so all five guys are going to be better because you've got that center and the quarterback. So I understand why the Raiders did it. And I understand why they wanted to pay that. And I don't think it was a bad deal. Sure, if they could get them for less, great for the team and great for their salary cap. But I like it a lot.
Yeah, I like it a lot as well. The Raiders get their guy and they have to spend money. And this deal is worth more in Nevada for Tyler Lindebaum than it would have been in other places that obviously have state income tax, which is something that you have to consider here when you look at any of these free agent deals, like the Malik Willis deal, for example, as we transition to the quarterbacks. I don't know where the market was for him. We had speculated the deal could be 25, the deal could be 30. In the end, Malik Willis goes to the Dolphins for a contract that's worth $22.5 million a year. It's 45 guaranteed, and that's pretty much what the money is when you look at the paper here. It's 2 years, 22.5, no state income tax. He has familiarity with the head coach and Jeff Hafley, familiarity with the new general manager and John Michael Sullivan, both of whom came from Green Bay. He has Achan, he has Waddle, but this is from my money, and it isn't mine, it's Malik's. A bit of a risk, not knowing if he had another offer in hand. You're kind of going to a teardown. The Dolphins, when they officially released Tua, which they did first thing this morning, when you woke up early on the East Coast, that was the first thing in your mailbox, the Dolphins with a classy goodbye to Tua Tagovailoa, they're taking on a massive dead cap hit. They're going to spread it out between this year and next. It's a post-June 1 release. The Dolphins are going to be bad. And a lot is going to be on Malik Willis's shoulders. This is his one shot at a bag. Go get it, young man. I'm fascinated to know, though, Jory, could he have gone to Pittsburgh? Could he have gone to Minnesota? I don't know the answer. Because the Dolphins, that's not an easy lift.
Right. When you compare it to Justin Fields in some way last year, there is this sense of, do you want the most amount of money because you don't know if he'll be able to get back to the table? And Malik Willis was not a first round pick like Justin Fields. So this is his first paid in a different way. Or do you want the team that's going to allow you to best succeed this year, both because of the talent around you, the surrounding cast, especially on offense, and because of the coaching staff believing in you and a chance to start? And I would say Malik Willis took the former, and that is fine. Like, you can choose. Sure. And credit to him if he's able to figure it out. He doesn't have as much talent around him. Even if he had gone to Arizona, I would think that he would have had more talent around him. And certainly if he had ended up in one of those jobs in Atlanta, which I know we'll get to Tua, but Atlanta certainly has more talent than Miami has on the offensive side of the ball right now. But I think what's interesting here is that we all kind of thought that Malik Willis was going to have this super competitive market, in part because of quarterbacks who were hitting free agency initially. He did. But then all of these quarterbacks at the veteran minimum, $1.3 million, start becoming available. You have the Kyler Murray, you have Tua Tagovailoa, Kirk Cousins, Geno Smith. And so all of a sudden, everyone else is costing $1.3 million. Are you going to be able to get $30 million now? Do they want you that much more? And so I actually do think that impacted his market. And then you also look at this, and I think if I'm a quarterback in the future trying to figure out how to revive my career, not only do I want to go to a play caller who's going to teach me a valuable system, I also want to go to a team that's going to win. And then the people who get to know me during that development time are going to end up in leadership and decision-making positions elsewhere. Because that's what happened here with Malik Willis and this staff that was with him with the Green Bay Packers. And so while the rest of the league's like, well, you did some good things, but it was a small sample size, Jeff Hafley and John Eric Sullivan had a bigger sample size of practice, and Jeff Hafley being their defensive coordinator practicing against Malik Willis. And I don't think this is totally unlike the Seahawks last year saying, okay, Sam Darnold had his 1 year in Minnesota, but Clint Kubiak knew him from his time in the San Francisco 49ers offense. And so he understood who he was in a way that made him ultimately more comfortable for Seattle. So I think we've got a little bit of a through line here of guys who used to want to work with you or who used to work with you and understood who you are as a worker, as a developer, and what your skills were to scheme around are more likely to want to pay you down the road.
Yeah, and I'm happy for Malik Willis as well. This guy who transferred from a big SEC program, ended up at Liberty, went to the Senior Bowl. Some people were talking him up as a top 10 pick. And then he fell to the third round and didn't work in Tennessee. They drafted Will Levis. They got rid of him. The Packers got him for like a six-pack of Spotted Cow. And then they turned him, and give credit to Matt LaFleur here, into a fantastic backup quarterback, did what the Packers did back in the day with Ron Wolf, develop quarterbacks, and then watch them go elsewhere with varying degrees of success. But Malik Willis gets the paycheck that some people thought he might get on draft night. He gets it eventually in Miami 4 years later, and now he has a chance, much like Tyler Linderbaum, to hit it a second time in free agency if this deal really works out. And anyone who got to know him, whether it's in Tennessee or Green Bay or back at the Senior Bowl, would say, oh, my God, like, what an amazing young man. Good for him. And I wish him well there. I also wish Tua well. I'm a big Tua fan. I'm fascinated how this works now in Atlanta, because one man's opportunity, another man's gain, and now Tua goes to Atlanta. It is now official. He gets a one-year deal. It's the league minimum. It's $1.3 million. It's like, hey, free quarterback, much like what the Steelers did last year with Russell Wilson when the Broncos got rid of him. The Broncos pay the salary. The Steelers get a quarterback. That was 2 years ago. And so now he could be the guy, because no one knows when Michael Penix is truly going to be available. So Kevin Stefanski, Tommy Rees now have two left-handed quarterbacks. Oh, by the way, Bijan Robinson and Drake London are also left-handed, for whatever that's worth. And I think Tua is the guy. I think Tua starts week one, if I had to make a bet right now. However, neither of these guys, Jory, has shown an ability to stay healthy. Michael Penix has been hurt at the NFL level. He was hurt repeatedly at the college level. We all know Tua's issues, well-documented. Someone suggested to me last season, trying to explain Mike McDaniel's, I want to say fall, but how it all fell apart, if you will, in Miami, saying, hey, this guy's calling plays for a quarterback that can't get hit. Everything is three-step, get it out quick, because he can't get hit. If he gets hit, it could be curtains. It could be the end. So you have two injury-prone quarterbacks, but they're playing inside, they're playing on turf, and they got a lot of weapons. So, like, if one of them works, it's fun. I just don't know which one.
Right, but I think as we were talking about in terms of what a quarterback is looking for, not only do they have the surrounding cast of talent, but like you said, there's a chance to start, and I'm not sure it's only a chance for a couple weeks. I mean, again, I hope that Michael Penix Jr. and Tua Tagovailoa can both get healthy, stay healthy, remain healthy for the rest of their careers. That's what I root for most players, if not all players, I guess. And I think that when you look at this, if Tua starts week one and it's going really well, Michael Penix Jr. doesn't have like 10 years of proven ability to do this. And he doesn't have a pre-existing relationship with Kevin Stefanski before a month or two ago. And so if you say that if Tua is doing really well and it looks good and they start rolling and Michael Penix Jr. is not fully healthy, or it's kind of a 10 to 12 weeks, let's say, at that point, then you try and push him a little bit. And all of a sudden, if Tua keeps winning, I'm not sure you take the job from Tua, because I think you kind of ride him until he doesn't win anymore. So I think there is a significant opportunity here, at least for the first year in Atlanta, if Tua does well, which is why if I'm Tua, I totally understand why he wants to go there.
Yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. I think the Falcons offense is fun. They've got the weapons, and it really is the 2020 Browns. It's Stefanski. It's Bill Callahan. It's AVP Alex Van Pelt, their former OC in Cleveland, who's now back there with Stefanski and Callahan. They signed Austin Hooper today, who was Stefanski and Andrew Berry's first big free agent signing back in 2020. They are getting the band back together in a very, very winnable division. I know that the Panthers made a big splash today with Jalen Phillips and the Buccaneers. They added a bunch of pieces, and they saw Mike Evans walk out the door as well. But this is a very winnable division, especially when you get that new first-year coach bounce and all of that. I would be bullish on the Falcons, regardless of who their quarterback is. I would just be, I don't know, anxious if I were a Falcons fan that either of these quarterbacks can stay healthy. You know, you don't often see a Super Bowl MVP leaving immediately after winning Super Bowl MVP. Matter of fact, the last one was 23 years ago. Dexter Jackson, the DB for the Bucs, won the MVP and then left immediately thereafter, a month later, for a free agent deal with the Arizona Cardinals. Although, were they the Phoenix Cardinals then? They were the Cardinals back then in 03. No, they were the Arizona Cardinals, right? In 03? They weren't the Phoenix Cardinals is like the 90s, right?
I'll look it up as we keep moving.
Okay, whatever. We'll look it up. Kenneth Walker gets a pretty good deal. So he leaves Seattle. He goes to Kansas City. We all knew the Chiefs wanted it back. Does this take him out of the Jeremiah Love in the top 10 sweepstakes? Likely. This is a good deal. It is basically 13 or 14 over 2. It's basically 28 over 2. I don't know if he's ever going to see 45 over 3, but 28 over 2 is a pretty good deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And Andrew, just to close the loop, the Phoenix Cardinals last season was 1993, and we went to the Arizona Cardinals in 1994.
Okay, so I was 10 years off. Thank you. I'm showing my age.
I love this for the Kansas City Chiefs. I think that Kenneth Walker showed what he can do. And if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, you don't want a guy who's going to be primarily productive in September and October. You want someone who, in the biggest moments on the biggest stage, when he's had a lot of wear and tear all season, it's not just the psychological element. Kenneth Walker, at the end of the season, was still healthy enough to be the Super Bowl MVP. He was still healthy enough in the divisional round to just take the San Francisco 49ers apart. And so I think that really appeals to the Kansas City Chiefs. And if you're Kenneth Walker, yeah, you got paid, but you're also not getting paid and no longer getting to contend and feel like you have a real chance to go make a Super Bowl run next year, which a lot of teams who need a running back might be in that situation. You're coming from a Super Bowl winner and you're going to a Super Bowl winner. And I think that when we talk about him and we talk about Travis Kelce coming back, I get that the Chiefs are doing some retooling of their roster and they let a couple cornerbacks go to the Rams. I still think that the Chiefs should be considered a problem in 2026. The question is just, are they a problem to make the playoffs or a problem to go far in the playoffs?
I think the problem to make the playoffs easily. I think they're in. But I also, and we said this last week, they need a lot more than just a running back. There is this idea out there, and it has been for a while, oh, just give them a running back. Let them get explosive. Let them trade for Breece Hall at the deadline last year. And bam, all of a sudden, they're a championship contender again. They're not, but they also now do have two first-round picks. They have lost both of their corners, both of them. Both of them go to the Rams. We'll hit that coming up shortly. So they've got some holes to fill defensively now. I think a hole or two on the offensive line to fill. Travis Kelce comes back. They still need a wide receiver, and Rashee Rice has more off-the-field issues, so you can't bank on him at all. You cannot rely on Rashee Rice. So there are issues there in Kansas City, but with the two number ones, I mean, they're in a good position. They're in a better position than most teams that are sitting here with two number ones that are just, you know, not good teams. All right, coming up, our team expands. Charles Robinson has logged into the system. He joins us next to tell us what on earth the Panthers are doing, giving $30 million a year to a very nice guy in Jalen Phillips, but a guy that has also had trouble staying healthy. That's next. We are live, a free agency edition of Inside Coverage on Yahoo. We're doing it live today, an Inside Coverage free agency edition on Yahoo. Andrew Siciliano, Jory Epstein, and joining us now, another one of our Yahoo senior NFL writers, Charles Robinson. Happy free agency to you, my friend, as well.
How you doing? Never download a computer update before you're about to kick something off. Don't do that. It's the worst thing possible. Always refuse those computers.
See, Rob, did you get one of those viruses? Were you hanging out on the wrong side of the internet and your computer shut down?
I was. Or my computer saw the Jalen Phillips deal and just glitched and decided this is, we're obviously not in reality right now.
Let's get to that. Jalen Phillips, former first-round pick by the Dolphins, who gave him to Vic Fangio, back to Vic Fangio, his former DC in Miami at the trade deadline. He had a really good run down the stretch for the Eagles, and he's a good player, especially in that system, a 3-4 system, which is what Ejiro Evero runs. Very similar system there. Fangio disciple from Denver days, way back in the day in Carolina. But the money, a 4-year, $120 million deal for Jalen Phillips. Congratulations, young man, to go to Carolina for a guy that's had an ACL, for a guy that's had an Achilles, is just stunning, Charles.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, really, we're talking about he finally, in the last 3 years, he finally put together a healthy season in 2025. And look, the Eagles were elated with his play. I mean, although he wasn't necessarily finishing sacks, he was getting a lot of pressure. I mean, he was a top three to four pressure player in percentage from the time the Eagles acquired him through the end of the season. And the coaching staff loved him. The front office loved him. And when I was at the combine, they felt like they were going to have an opportunity to get him back in the fold with a contract. But you know, it was funny because at the time during the combine, the talk was like, okay, you know, he'll probably, because of the injury history, the market out there, we're probably looking at an annual average value for him in the low 20s, maybe 20, 22, 24 million, depending on what teams come to the table. So when this landed, I mean, it was pretty stunning, the 80 million in guarantees. You know, look, there's no doubt he's a player with a ton of upside. I don't think a lot of people saw Carolina coming because of Carolina's cap space. This is really going to be kind of a one swing deal for them in free agency. I think this is going to be their big free agency signing, and then they're going to move on from here, maybe with some more equitable, you know, targets in the second, third, fourth tier of free agency. But, you know, look, the defense is already great, right? The one thing I will say about this signing, the Carolina defense down the stretch last year was very, very impressive. So to add another edge piece to it, particularly someone who can create a lot of pressure and havoc, I can understand the move toward this, no doubt. And they also look at their offense and they feel like they've got a lot of young pieces on offense that are going to take a step forward. They feel like, you know, they're going to get Jonathan Brooks back from the knee injury. Obviously, Tet McMillan, huge season last year as a rookie, was the offensive rookie of the year. I think they felt like Jalen Coker, particularly in the playoffs, showcased what he could be as a number two receiver. So I think they feel like they have the young pieces they need to develop and take a step forward on offense. What they needed was another big defensive piece to turn the key. I just think the contract numbers are just shocking. That's the one. Look, the Linderbaum deal, obviously, I think was a huge one because it blows up the center and really interior offensive line market. But this one for the injuries, there's no doubt there is a gamble here. But talk to the Panthers. They'll tell you, guess what? The Eagles were willing to gamble on this guy too. They were going to pay him a lot of money. And that's a pretty well-run organization. So maybe there is some safety in knowing that the Eagles knew exactly what they had and they were going to pay him.
Yeah, I think when you look at the Raiders and the money that they paid for Tyler Linderbaum, yes, part of it was because they're not the most attractive spot to go to for some reasons, but part of it was also just because other people were willing to pay the money. And if other people are also willing to pay the money in order to pry someone away and in order to get them somewhere, you have to pay. And so, like you're saying, Sirab, this idea of if the Eagles were willing to pay X amount, the Panthers had to offer more if they wanted to get Jalen Phillips services. I also think it's interesting because there was a lot of belief that last offseason there were going to be some moves in Carolina to help the defense that were not made. I think there were a lot of people in that building who were surprised when they took Tet McMillan with their first pick, not only because of his interviews, but more because they thought they would take a defensive player in the first round because they felt like their defense just really needed help. And there was almost like a morale element to it of, yes, help is on the way for the defense. We're not just going to keep making you cook without the right ingredients. And so I think that there is an element of that too. I think from a leadership standpoint, Jalen Phillips has been off the charts everywhere he goes. It's really just a health question. And I do imagine that even if health is a question, and it's a fair one, the way that he was able to integrate into the Eagles so quickly last year and be effective immediately has got to give them a little bit of reassurance. And yes, he'd played for Vic Fangio before. I understand that. But I still think when you come to a new place with new teammates, some guys are slower to acclimate. And Carolina is able to see, hey, this guy can acclimate. And in many ways, Brian Burns there's such a hole left there when he left Carolina, both on the field and from a leadership standpoint. And Jalen Phillips, when healthy, fills both of those holes.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the Brian Burns thing. I was going to get to that as well. Last year, 2 years ago, really, the Panthers had one of the worst defenses statistically in recent NFL history. And last year, they went out and they signed a bunch of B and C list pieces, middle of the road, mid-tier free agents, if you will, to try to plug into that defense. And the results weren't immediate. But as you guys point out, by the end of the year, they were playing a little bit better. This is their big swing to try to recoup what they lost from the whole Brian Burns thing. And it is a very expensive thing. I also think that on the topic of the contracts, and C-Rob, you mentioned Linderbaum. We discussed him before you jumped in here. I think overall people need to step back and just deal with the sticker shock. We spoke, all of us did, when we were at the Combine about how the salary cap is now $301 million and it's going to keep going up. Like when you hear about teams with their dead cap, whether it's the Dolphins or the Browns or whomever, those teams understand that the percentage of that dead cap hit on the overall cap is only going to get smaller as the cap, fingers crossed, continues to go higher and higher. Well, that means the salaries are going to go higher and higher as well. Like Alec Pierce, for example, like that number blows my mind. The number on Alec Pierce is 4 years. Let me get it for you right here, $116 million. But when you consider what the franchise tag number is, which is $27 million, and you consider that there's competition, and when you have other suitors for your services, you are going to benefit. So that number, you go, what? But at the same time, guys, you're going to say this every year. We all are going to say this every year. And 2 years from now, you're going to look back on the Alec Pierce number and go, $27 million, big deal. Big deal. You can't get a slot now for $27 million.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, when you start to look at some of these numbers, now you struggle to find a cheap position in football, right?
Right.
Because it used to be the tight ends, not really the tight ends anymore. Now, you know, you're going to approach $20 million a year for the best tight end.
It's not center.
Center. Remember, center was all, it used to be guards. Oh, guards don't make a ton. Then guards were making a ton. Now it's centers. You know, centers didn't make a ton. Now this, but the thing is, it doesn't just ripple for the centers. It ripples for the guards. The top tier guards now go, hey, look, we understand he's an anchor, you know, for Las Vegas. We understand he'll make line calls for Fernando Mendoza. It'll make that transition that much easier. We understand that Tom Brady always prized his relationship with his centers. And certainly there was an element of weighing in on this, saying we want to, you know, give Fernando Mendoza an elite center, a player we think's elite, and we want to let him grow with that center for maybe the next 10 years of his career. Like, it's not just the one contract deal. We want to continue to sign this guy with Fernando and have those two move forward together. But it ripples outward. Now that the tackles, offensive tackles are sitting there going, wait a minute, like a second tier offensive tackle, that's second tier offensive tackle money. And that was already a lot. So the centers are now making what second tier
going to get.
Yeah. I mean, this is, it's so it will definitely ripple. And, you know, I've gone back to this comment a few times when we've been on the podcast about Robert Kraft talking about, hey, we're going to get an 18th game and we need, you know, we're going to push international play. And he tied it to the cap. He said, if we want to keep raising the cap and making all this money and the salaries going up, the players got to be our partners. We got to do an 18th game. We got to have international money coming in. This is what he's talking about, because he knows as that cap grows, you're going to run out of places to find cheap, equitable deals. And that's what happens when the center blows up. And an injury, let's be honest, an injury-prone end lands a deal like Jalen Phillips did with the Carolina Panthers.
Well, let's just say it a little simpler, which is that Robert Kraft knows he's going to have to pay Drake May someday. And it's been a long time since he's paid a quarterback top market. So Robert Kraft is like, I need all of you to have an 18th game and everyone playing abroad before I have to pay Drake May.
Sure.
Yeah. You're right about that.
Yeah. All that. The quarterbacks are going to get paid. And look, we don't need to talk about the Titans right now, but the Titans are kind of doing what Robert Kraft and the Patriots did last year, which is we have a quarterback who we took in the top five. We thought he did well his rookie season. We have a new head coach. We're now going to spend all this money and try to win with that guy now. The Patriots did that last year. They spent more money than any other team in free agency, and it worked. I'm not saying the Titans are going to go to the Super Bowl and play at SoFi in 11 months, but that's what the Titans are doing today, because they're signing any and everything that wasn't nailed down in New York or elsewhere. Whether you played for Robert Saleh or you played for Brian Daboll, the Titans are taking the Patriots' plan because they know in a year they're also going to have to pay their quarterback. Now, you don't have to immediately, or 2 years from now. You don't have to immediately, but that's what Drake May and the Patriots are looking at. Let's look at the Mike Evans thing as well. I still don't believe it. I mean, it makes sense. Eventually, not everyone finishes their career with the team that drafted him, C-Rob. But the idea that Mike Evans truly did walk away when the money just got too good to go to San Francisco. And the Buccaneers have needs. They had to make some signings defensively. They got Kenneth Gainwell from the Steelers. That's a nice little piece there as well. And Mike Evans is going with Brock Purdy and Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, and he's getting paid. There's no doubt about that. And I think that certainly plays into it. But he's also walking into a situation with the 49ers where he's not going to be relegated to anything but being a high-volume number one receiver. They need him badly. And I'm telling you, it's not like he's really talked about it, but I think Kyle Shanahan, since he left the Atlanta Falcons, has been dreaming about getting another big, you know, confident, volume-heavy wide receiver like a Julio Jones. Now, obviously, Mike Evans is far older. I get it. I'm not making that comp, obviously, because we're talking about completely different ages at this point. But I think Mike Evans still feels like, hey, I can be a, you know, 150 target guy in an offense. And now he's going into a place with the San Francisco 49ers where you look around at the pass catching options. And obviously there's questions. Ricky Pearsall's still got to continue to grow into a role as not only an every down wide receiver, but in every game wide receiver. He has to be healthy. You know, you look at Christian McCaffrey, they're starting to be wear and tear on that. I think you want to take some of the touches he gets off the table, particularly from a pass catching standpoint. And then, you know, you look at George Kittle. We're nearing the end of the George Kittle window. So you're playing into the end of Mike Evans' window. You're playing into the end of George Kittle's window. I think you're trying to maximize what you get out of these guys right now. I think it's very good for Brock Purdy. I'm very curious to see what happens with Trent Williams, because that is a player that I think you have to have, you know, locked in to that offensive line. But I think Kyle Shanahan has wanted a big, very culture, practice hard, great in the locker room player, dependable from the standpoint of when he's on the field, you know he's going to be coming down with a lot of 50-50 balls. I like it from the standpoint of trying to maximize what you're getting out of this window now with a couple of aging players on, well, more than a couple, but you know, a few aging players on the San Francisco roster, and finally giving Purdy the number one, like the staple number one receiver that they keep reaching for and missing out on. They thought they had Brandon Ayuk and didn't.
Yeah. And if you're the San Francisco, if you are the San Francisco 49ers, lots of words today,
which they are,
and you are competing in the NFC. Yeah, they are. Let me tell you that. And they are competing in the NFC West. You've got Puka Nacua, you've got Jaxon Smith-Njigba, but you are trying to keep up in a division that does have these high profile star receivers who can be that big volume guy. And even though Kyle has always done it a little bit differently, where his system doesn't really seem to depend on one person, particularly in the pass catching game. And of course, they have Christian McCaffrey, which no one else in the division quite has. I do think to get over the hump on that offensive side, you need someone, and they don't have Debo Samuel anymore. They sent him to Washington. Brandon Ayuk never reported last year, and they've made clear that that's not going to be a relationship that is restarted. And so it was time to fill that gap. And like you said, to have someone who can do it with the culture standpoint too. I think they're going to be excited. You do got to make sure he stays healthy though.
Right.
Not because of the substation, but just because of the way that they practice in San Francisco. Oh, yeah. There is a lot of stress that goes onto their body. So that would be my only question with someone coming in, given Mike's age. But I hope it works, because I think it'd be fun to see.
Hamstrings, I forgot about the substation's bad mix.
No, you didn't.
What are we doing here?
We're combining every 2 days.
We're combining Mike Evans' hamstrings with the substation.
as we talk, and by the way, we're doing this live, obviously, here. It's just after 6 o'clock in the East. I'm looking at my emails here. We have two new deals. Quay Walker, guys, is going to the Raiders from the Packers, and the Raiders are getting another free agent linebacker, Nakobe Dean, formerly of the Eagles. So the Raiders keep on spending money. Nakobe Dean and Quay Walker. There's something going on here as well with teams needing to burn
Nakobe
through
Dean
cap.
Had a market.
Yeah, Nakobe Dean had a market. Let me. I want to pull up the available cap heading into the day. So heading into the day, I mentioned the Titans, and they signed signing official on Wednesday. Cordell Flott and John Franklin Myers and Daniel Bellinger and Wandale Robinson. A lot of guys here. The Chargers were number one with the cap. The Titans were number two. The Raiders were number three. So Jalen Naylor gets a contract. Quay Walker, Nakobe Dean, Tyler Linderbaum, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have the Jets. I don't get what the Jets are doing. I mean, the Jets have five number one picks the next 2 years. I'm not saying you should tank. Please don't clip this and say you should tank. But you signed a bunch of guys on the defensive side of the ball at like $10 million a year, like Kingsley and Igbaré and Demario Davis and David Onyemata. And you were really bad last year. You trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick and you give him a new contract. And Minkah Fitzpatrick, who had only one interception last year, still had more than the entire Jets roster on the defensive side of the ball. But what are you doing, like throwing a bunch of $10 million a year contracts at a bunch of aging veteran players to try to fix your defense? Are you trying to be mediocre next year? Like, what does mediocre get you? Like, what is the ninth overall pick?
It gets you your job in 2027, particularly if you're Aaron Glenn. Are you that sure that they have enough runway from an owner who's as consistent and able to stick to his word as Woody Johnson, that their jobs are going to be safe? I think Darren Mushi probably has a little bit more of a leash, because GMs often do, both because of their proximity to their owner and because they're usually executing the long-term plan, whereas the coaches are supposed to be maximizing the talent now. But I think what they're doing is they're trying to make sure they have a job in 2 years. The problem is, who's going to be their quarterback? Because like you said, I still don't think they're going to be good.
Well, they have 3 first-round picks in the 2027 draft, and that's going to help them find a quarterback.
One of them, you need one of them to be in the top three. And again,
yeah,
I'm not saying they need to tank at all. Maybe this is their way of ensuring they're picking the top five. Like, we're going to give $10 million a year contracts, which isn't a lot of money in the grand scheme of things, considering all the other deals we've told you about in the last 40 minutes, and to a bunch of middle-aged guys, knowing it's kind of like a Band-Aid where it looks like we're doing something and we'll be better, but we know we're not going to be good. Is that what they're doing?
Well, until the quarterback situation's really resolved in a way that lifts the rest of the team, are you sure they're really going to be not in the top five next year? Like, I'm not banging on the Jets right now, but until you meaningfully resolve the quarterback spot, I don't know that we can count on this team being anything more than what they have been historically, right? You know, they had an era where they had a bunch of young, you know, great defensive guys, and it amounted to nothing because of the fact that the quarterback situation was not resolved. You know, they've had some offensive pieces. They've had Breece Hall, you know, put up a monster year since he's been there. Again, without the quarterback situation being resolved, the Jets continue to be a poor team. And I do not count on the Jets being a good team until they can lock in the quarterback that they ultimately are going to have in the long term. And in this rotation, they might lock in a quarterback, but I don't think it's going to be on a deal that's going to extend out meaningfully past the 2026 season. I do think they are pointed at the 2027 draft with those 3 first-round picks, and they're saying, we're going to have an opportunity to add maybe 3 very high-end players if this draft is as deep as everyone expects it to ultimately be. And by the way, could have as many as, what, 5 first-round quarterbacks, 6 first-round quarterbacks, depending on who all comes out and who surfaces from the ether in that class. They're already comparing the 2027 potential to the 2024 draft, which obviously the first 3 quarterbacks that came off the board were Caleb, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May, and Bo Nix was in the mix there. So you're looking at 4 long-term starters, potentially, as long as their health holds up, that came out of the 2024 draft. If 2027 produces that, you got to feel pretty good about that if you're the Jets.
I'm not laughing at you, see, Rob. I'm laughing at the tweet on the screen here, the Breece Hall tweet. Like, damn, yeah, we sure got a lot of money in Florham Park for all these contracts. This is the guy that didn't get the long-term deal. He got the tag, right? He's getting some of that money, but he's not getting the long-term deal, at least not yet, that he had hoped that he would get. Yeah, they're spending money. Money for mediocrity right now.
Listen, if you're
maybe
Breece
the move
too,
is
you're...
to just sign everyone but a quarterback, and then if you don't have a quarterback, then you're not going anywhere. And also, we already saw a defense that had no interceptions last year. So if no one throws the ball on offense, there's no interceptions there, and then you have 2 records, and we can carry on.
That's what you did there.
By the way, if you're Breece Hall, you're sitting there and you're going, okay, just saw what Kenneth Walker got, just saw what Travis Etienne got. This really needed to be my rotation of getting out into free agency, because I think he would have gotten a deal in the realm, maybe slotted between those two, between a Kenneth Walker
I think he would
and a Travis Etienne.
Absolutely. Travis Etienne goes to New Orleans. Does it mean Alvin Kamara is getting cut? I don't know, but they're kind of sort of the same guy, one younger than the other. I mean, Kamara is an exceptional guy that will be considered for Canton one day. Don't get me wrong. Travis Etienne, a much younger player, but that's one to watch. Coming up next, our thoughts, and I know it happened Friday night, on what's left now for the Ravens to do after getting Max Crosby, because everyone else that they could have re-signed has left today. That's next on a live edition of Inside Coverage. We got a live show today on Yahoo. Thanks for joining us. This is Inside Coverage. Andrew Siciliano, Jory Epstein, and Charles Robinson are senior NFL writers. It is day one of NFL free agency. Technically, these deals are not done until Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern time, but the window opened for legal free agent negotiations at noon Eastern time. So we are just over 6 hours in to the free agency window. If you will, Raiders making a couple of deals in the last 20 minutes. The Raiders getting N'Kobe Dean and Quay Walker of the Eagles and Packers, respectively, a couple of linebackers, and they both get nice deals. This comes on the heels of what the Raiders did on Friday, which is, I don't want to say stunning the world, but I think from whom they got their first round picks is what was stunning about the Max Crosby deal. They got two number ones. That's it. Clean deal from the Baltimore Ravens for future Hall of Famer, I'll say it, Max Crosby, who said he wanted to be a Raider for life. He is now happy to move on and join forces with Lamar Jackson. Guys, I was at a dinner. I had my phone, I don't want to say turned off, but I was trying to be present on Friday evening.
Trying is the operative word there, it sounds like.
Trying to be present. Oh, no, Jory, I had a legit 90 minutes where I didn't look at my phone. And then I finally take it out and it's, you know, God knows how many texts. And my first reaction was I kind of had caught wind of this in the morning. Like I did some digging after the Lamar Jackson tweet, right, with the Samuel L. Jackson thing. No, I'm sorry, Denzel Washington thing in his tweet. I'm like, something's up here. But the idea that the Ravens, Jory, you go first here, gave up two number ones. This is a team, Eric DaCosta, that had never given up a single first round pick in a deal. They gave up two is a level of aggression from that front office that I'm still stunned by.
Yeah, I think that there's a sense of urgency here that we're seeing that, hey, we have Lamar Jackson in his window and we want to go and take that window right now. I think when you have Jesse Minter and you have a defensive mind like Jesse, who you feel like is going to really capitalize on any of your talent on that side of the ball, you feel like any defensive acquisition is going to go a little bit further. And I feel like, how differently do we feel about the Baltimore Ravens a week ago till now? Because I feel very differently, and I recognize that the rest of their roster is still there, but I do think they needed a defensive piece to put them over the top. And I was talking to an offensive coach today, asking them about Max Crosby and some of the other defenders, and they told me that Max was the most difficult defender to game plan for them since Aaron Donald. Just a game wrecker every single play, and that's what you hear from competitors. It's just he doesn't take plays off. He doesn't have really weaknesses in a lot of ways. And so he's not only finishing, he's also along the way causing so much havoc and wrecking games, I should say. And so I really think that this makes a huge difference. I also understand, though, why other teams, I know the Cowboys are one of them, where they had reportedly offered a first and a second. I understand why not everyone is willing to give up two firsts for Max Crosby. I think this is a move that if you're going to make it, you should feel like you can win this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt this is a window trade, 100%. This is, we're going and getting this guy because we're looking at Lamar Jackson right now, who, by the way, we still have his, you know, cap number for 2026 is over $74 million. They still have to negotiate that down. Now Crosby comes in with another 30 plus million on top of that. They can restructure Crosby's deal, try to create some cap room, but they really need to get the extension of Lamar Jackson done. That has to be at the top of their priority list immediately from this point moving on, because we're seeing them lose talent. And part of the reason why they're losing talent is because they cannot spend in free agency with the Lamar Jackson cap number being so prohibitive. But in terms of the Crosby trade, I understand the two first round picks because the thought process is if we're going where we're going with this guy and we're maximizing Lamar's window, we're going to be picking at the back of the first round. We have these conversations all the time about teams that give up multiple first round picks for a player. We're competing now. So the draft compensation we're giving up is really not as valuable as it looks on the surface, even though one of those picks, you know, comes in that valuable 2027 draft. And, you know, I think one thing I'll say about Crosby, he went through a lot of stuff with the Raiders and by and large really kept his mouth shut in dysfunction. I mean, it wasn't, he could have been far more vocal about all the things he saw go wrong during his entire tenure with the Raiders. He did not do that. He was, for the most part, did not do that. He was a very good player. He's a very good teammate. He raises the level of practice. I've been on the field before where he's been driving the coaches nuts because he's, you know, batting balls down in practice and he's going at a speed that is, you know, disrupting their ability to run, you know, offense at times or just execute certain plays. And, you know, I think that's another good thing, obviously, for the Baltimore Ravens. And it's the thing, what I thought when I first saw this deal, I thought they must really, at this point, be afraid, the Baltimore Ravens, about how much depreciation is coming in the running game of Lamar Jackson's legs. And I truly believe this plays into it. They won't say it, but I think they know Lamar's going to hit his 30s. And that running aspect of his game is really going to have to be toned down. And that could dramatically change what kind of player he is in terms of offensive productivity for the Baltimore Ravens. They're not there yet, but that is coming. And we're starting to see injuries.
I think it's like, already
again,
there.
Once. Yeah. Well, we're getting there.
I don't think he wants
I think 2026.
To run. He don't want
I think 2026. Yeah. I think 2026 will say a lot about that. I really, truly believe that. I think, you know, let's see functionally what he wants to do on the field and what they're designing. And remember, Todd Monken is now gone. It's going to be a very pivotal year for him offensively in 2026. But I truly believe this is not just about, are we going to be able to sign Lamar to another, you know, long-term deal? I think it's, we know what's coming. There could be a significant drop-off here physically. Let's make sure that we're not sacrificing anything in the next 2 to 3 years.
Charles, I think you hit on something interesting, too, because we've talked about teams where the best players are the best workers and the ones who are practicing the hardest and the most consistently. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that this is the first time that the Ravens have had a player like that in the building or even that he's the first one to come in. But do you think that if Lamar Jackson is watching practice and Max Crosby is just going after quarterbacks and Lamar is on the sideline, which he was often this past year and injured, is there any kind of motivation or hey, I want to be able to show that I could do this in practice against Max Crosby and I want to up my game because he's upping his game? Do you think that plays into this, not as the reason they signed him, but as a potential right. added benefit?
Yeah, I mean, you covered the Cowboys all those years. I mean, it's good to have a competitor in Dak Prescott and Micah Parsons across from each other, right? It's good to sit there and listen to these guys talk to each other during practice. I would suggest that this is – the Baltimore Ravens have had a number of good defensive players. I would suggest this is going to be maybe their most active, you know, hard practicing, talking, going back and forth with a player like Lamar Jackson that they've had on that defensive side of football. It's the quarterback. I say from a morale standpoint and a motivation standpoint, he's the Lamar Jackson of their defense now, right? He's going to raise the level of everyone else out there and then also challenge Lamar Jackson to be better every single day. I think it's good when you have two competitors like that. And as Andrew has mentioned, often Lamar misses practice late in practice weeks. Maybe that will be curbed a bit with Max Crosby added to the roster. Maybe there'll be some motivation to be
Lamar
out there
Jackson,
on Thursday.
The other way around. He likes to practice late in the
early.
Week. He doesn't often
yeah, he
practice.
Likes to laugh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. On Wednesday.
Yeah. He'll be in there
I
on a Wednesday.
I highly recommend. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I highly recommend going back to Christmas Eve last year, 2025, and reading the column, the piece that Mike Preston, longtime Baltimore journalist, wrote in the Baltimore Sun, kind of pushing Lamar Jackson to be more like Ray Lewis or Ed Reed or leaders that have come before him in setting a tone that you guys both point out Max Crosby is always doing. And Mike Preston basically said, I wouldn't re-sign Lamar because he's not that guy. So this is a new dynamic, and yeah, it's a great point that you guys both make there. And while they haven't redone Lamar's deal, the Ravens today have seen Isaiah Likely leave, Tyler Linderbaum, Charlie Kohler, the punter Jordan Stout, and Draymond Jones as well, who they had gotten at the trade deadline from Tennessee. He goes and joins Mike Vrabel up there in New England. They're both from Cleveland. They both were at Ohio State, not at the same time, but there's an obvious connection there. All right, let's get back to the quarterbacks, because as we sit here this evening, coming up on 6:30 Eastern time, Jory, we still have Kyler Murray unsigned. We don't know where he's going to go. We don't know where like a Kirk Cousins is going to go. I don't know if Joe Flacco is exciting to anybody. But other than Tua and Malik Willis, the quarterback carousel has been kind of slow to start moving.
Yeah, Malik Willis being off the board early isn't surprising, but it is a little bit interesting because I think the rest of the market, as we discussed, influenced where he went and the dollar amount that he went for. I am still curious about Kyler in Minnesota. I'm not that convinced it's the best fit for Minnesota and for what Kevin O'Connell does, but I do think that it's Kyler's top choice of the available options. I think that Minnesota and Atlanta were probably his top two, Indianapolis kind of at that next level, and Atlanta now has Tua Tagovailoa. But I also think that Kevin Stefanski likes a quarterback working within structure a little bit and maximizing that more than he wants someone who's kind of that dual threat. And so that doesn't surprise me. It's notable that Aaron Rodgers is still available and that the two teams he was and is most likely to go to, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Minnesota Vikings, have not done anything with those markets. So I think that that is worth watching. And at what point in the market does he say, hey, okay, I'm going to reach out if someone hasn't offered me a contract? Because if one of those goes away and the other one is there, I think Aaron makes a stronger push to try and get there.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. You know, the Kyler Murray scenarios are interesting because, you know, I was talking to one agent and he said, you know, there's just this presumption that some of these guys like a Kyler are going to go out there and sign, you know, the veteran minimum deal and do a 1 year deal. And he said, as an agent, what I would advise the quarterback is if you go out there and you sign a veteran minimum deal, then what commitment are you really getting? How are you not just the next Russell Wilson ready to be pushed aside, you know, for the second something isn't going right? Like if you're going to go somewhere, try to get where you want to be, try to connect with the right coaches, try to connect with the right pieces around you, but also try to connect with a contract number that doesn't make it easy to just punch you the second, you know, something goes wrong. So I think that's part of the reason why, you know, we hear that, you know, Kyler might take a little bit of time. You know, maybe this isn't something that happens right away. I think Minnesota is still sorting out its options as well. And if you're Aaron Rodgers, even though there's this perception of it's Steelers or nothing, I don't believe that. I don't think that's true. I think if Minnesota were available, I think there's a chance that Aaron Rodgers would once again take that route. I do believe that's where he wanted to go last offseason. I think he was happy in Pittsburgh. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, Malik Willis's market was a little softer than we expected. The Arizona Cardinals, I mean, what are they doing? You know, there's still these teams. You know, the Jets, I don't know how the Jets, the convincing the Jets would have to do to get someone in on a one-year deal. I mean, either the player would have to be in desperation at that point. It's just how would you walk into the Jets in any scenario feeling like I can trust the owner, I can trust this one-year opportunity, I can trust the mid-level signings that they're making? You just can't.
So, Charles, I want to ask you, talked about the money commitment, and I completely agree. The more money that's committed, the more years, they're more committed. But do we feel like those commitments mean less these days when you see Kyler Murray and the dead cap they just took? Point. The Dolphins taking 99 plus dead cap for Tua, and even the Falcons signed Kirk Cousins. He wanted 3 years. He wanted $100 million so that they would be committed, and they drafted Michael Penix Jr. A month and a half later.
It's a great point.
Yep. No, you're right. Totally right. As we see in the real...
It's no career commitment, 8 point.
No, it isn't. I'm going to say we have a minute here. Kenny Pickett just signed to the Carolina Panthers or agreed to terms to the Panthers, so he'll be backing up Bryce Young, former first-round pick of the Steelers, played last year in Cleveland and in Vegas. 90 seconds, Jory. Rashawn Gary traded from the Packers. They didn't pick up his fifth year. They send him to the Dallas Cowboys. This is the most. It was a fourth-round pick. This is the most I think I can remember a team giving up for that. Oh, we're going to float that we're cutting a guy and guy accidentally tweets goodbye. Like he was going to get cut, a fourth round pick. We got a minute.
2027 fourth round pick. And then you guarantee that you get him and you get him at his previous price point. You're not having to negotiate. I don't think it's crazy. I think that in order for Christian Parker, their new defensive coordinator, to develop the young DBs, he needs the guys along the front. Now you have Rashawn Gary, Quinnen Williams, Oso Digizua, and Kenny Clark. Maybe you could have gotten him anyway, but I didn't think it was prohibitive, especially when you think about what they were considering giving up for Max Crosby.
Yeah, fair point. They could have gotten Max Crosby. They didn't want to go reportedly to the two number ones. They preferred a one at a two. It didn't happen. And so the Raiders take the deal for the two number ones. Guys, we just did a live show. We want to do one again on Wednesday. I don't know if we'll do it live, but let's do a free agency show again on Wednesday. By that point, maybe Kyler Murray, maybe Aaron Rodgers have new homes when the new league year becomes official, or Aaron Rodgers doesn't in our final 10 seconds. Final 10 seconds. Is Aaron Rodgers signed on Wednesday? Jory, go.
No.
Charles?
No way. No way. No chance.
Nope. I've seen this movie before. Thanks for watching Inside Coverage, everybody. Talk to you guys on Wednesday. So long.
Wow.